expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey, and midday every Sunday with Elise Glick on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glick Show. Live on Sundays, we're back to our regularly scheduled time, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time. If you are not on my website, you should be. It's thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can join us on Twitter. I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. And just hang out with us online. We tweet during the show. We do all kinds of crazy stuff. So glad you're here to join us as we do the run-up to Christmas. I'll be hanging out for Clark a couple of days at the end of the year. I can't believe Christmas is just a couple of weeks away. I'm going to my very first Christmas party this afternoon. And it seems like there's this weekend, and then there's next weekend, and then there's Christmas. So we are really moving very speedily towards the end of the year. And I hope it's a good one for you. All right, lines are wide open. Lots to talk about. We have to catch up from last week. Numbers are kind of crazy. We've seen the Dow just kind of run up and run down and run up and run down. This week it ended up 164 points. All of that gain came on Friday when the stock market surged 186 points. The Dow, the S&P was up 20 points and NASDAQ was up 50 points. Earlier in the week, we saw it down by a similar amount. It's just kind of crazy. I mean, what is going on? And what's really going on is that the European Union has really just up and down the whole week. We saw Britain decide not to participate and maintain its independence. That caused a whole lot of fracas out there. We've seen the job numbers fall in this country. First-time unemployment polls down to the lowest level in about 4 or 6 months, I think, about 389,000. We saw actually the numbers of jobs created creep up, which was exciting, to about 120,000. We saw the unemployment rate dip, the official rate, dip from over 9% to 8.6%. That was sort of surprising, and then we found out that the labor participation rate is now at the lowest point it's been at since, I don't know, the 1980s or something. Not so good. So there's been a real push-pull of positive and negative economic information over the last few weeks, and the stock market is reflecting that by the swings of a 1.5% up, 1.5% down, and lots of it depends on what's going on in Europe. Where the European markets land and the news coming out of Europe regarding the debt problems that many of these countries are having is having a direct effect now on what's going on in this country. In fact, I think it was in either the Wall Street Journal from the weekend section yesterday or the New York Times today. There was a story about how bond traders are getting up at 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning. I think it was the New York Times this morning, because they need to read the headlines to understand how it's going to affect stock markets here in the U.S. And so they're getting up at 1 to see what's going on in Europe, to read the headlines, to then figure out what's going to happen here. That is really, really crazy. On the mortgage side, we saw that mortgage interest rates stayed at about 3.86. Is that right? 3.86%. Yeah, it's under 4% for a 30-year loan at the moment, which is really just kind of a nutty, nutty thing. Again, if you haven't refinanced, but you can refinance, not everybody can, this is an amazing time to do it. So when you look at what's going on with the economy, here we are in the run-up to the end of the year. Oftentimes you get a little Christmas present with the stock market. It doesn't seem to be happening. You look what's going on in the world markets, it's the same thing that's going on here. Everything's either up a couple hundred points or down a couple hundred points. Really, really crazy stuff. And I think it's hard for people to imagine that we're going to see any sort of stability coming to the beginning of the year. And now let's talk a little bit about that presidential election, right? Because what happens in a presidential election every 4 years is we see the markets stop, the real estate housing market slow, not that it can be much slower than it is now, but it slows as everybody sort of wonders what kind of a presidency we're going to be having. What are those first 100 days going to look like? What is, are we going to have a new administration? Or are we going to continue with the same administration? There's a lot of questioning and concern. And on top of the fact that there are so many things that are going to die at the end of 2012. And so we enter 2012, I think, still in a very, very weak economic situation where there's a lot of uncertainty. There's uncertainty with the deficit. There's uncertainty with taxes. For a business person, very hard to gauge what's going on. In fact, I was looking at some of the manufacturing numbers, and what you're seeing is just there's just a continued depression of people who are buying sort of the big ticket items. Now, we've been hearing this week about how retail sales have held up, even though people's income is down, even though people have been unemployed for a long time, all the rest, retail sales are up. But what doesn't seem to be growing are the sales of the big stuff, right? The refrigerators and the dishwashers. Whirlpool is laying off people. Other companies are laying off. It is really interesting to kind of watch what's going on with manufacturing in this country. Now, in the New York Times again this morning, there's a discussion in Thomas Friedman's column about the three unemployment problems the next president has to solve, whether it's Obama or a Republican. And the first one is sort of short-term, the idea that we are not creating enough jobs in this country to keep up with the number of people that are coming into the job market. So that's a very long-term structural problem. We're just not creating them. And we have to figure out what we can do to create them. And manufacturing, which has been the harbinger of employment for decades in this country, maybe even centuries, we can't count it in anymore. So that's the first problem. The second problem are sort of people who've been unemployed for so long that they've started to lose their skills and their contacts in the job market. And we need to focus on this group. These are people who have aged out of the 99 weeks of unemployment, or they've given up and they've gone. This is a second large group. We have to figure out how to get them retrained. We have to figure out how to bring them back into the workforce. And what we're going to do, how we're going to get them employed. What are they going to do, literally, to earn a living when you still have four people applying for every job that's available out there? The third category of unemployment is our young people who are coming out of college. And there was another interesting article, again, in one of the weekend papers. Somebody who is a management consultant from New York had worked with 75 top kids from top schools. And 6 months after graduation or 8 months after graduation, of the 75, about 8 are employed in the areas that they want to be in, and everybody else is either unemployed, looking to continue their education, or scraping by on, I'm waitressing here a few hours a week, and I'm pulling coffees here a few hours a week. You know, focusing on the young people and what's going to happen going forward for them as they build their careers, coming into an extraordinarily tough career time. So these are kind of big-ticket issues that we're facing in this country, and what happens with those categories of unemployment and categories of job growth and how we solve those problems, that is going to be the mark for whoever wins the next election. And coming into this year is going to be the entire story about this election. It's going to be who can solve the economic problems and get us back to some sort of normal. I think what everybody wants in this country is some sort of normal. And I think as I look out a couple of weeks to Christmas, my big Christmas wish this year is for some kind of normal. Some kind of normal for the housing industry would be very nice, and all of the little ripples that go along with it. Some kind of normal for the manufacturing industry would be very nice. What I don't want to have happen is a big recession in Europe and have that start to parlay into what's going on here in the U.S. So anyway, lots of things to catch up on. Welcoming your calls and comments, 404-872-0750. And now I want to turn the conversation a little bit to Christmas, because even though retail sales were up, every time I have asked you what you're spending on Christmas this year, almost everybody says exactly the same thing, which is, I am not spending any more than I spent last year. I'm just not. And I think, you know, of 20 or 30 calls that we typically take in this show over the course of a couple of hours when we talk about this. You know, maybe one person says or two people say they're spending the same, and everybody else starts to talk about how they're spending less because they need less. Now, I'm going to kick this off with something I read in the Parade magazine this morning. I'm trying to think of her name. She's dating Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, but she's a television chef, and they asked her what she's doing for the holidays. And so she said that she's going to have seven trees. I'm not sure what the magic number about seven trees is. But then when it comes to gifts, that she and her boyfriend, the governor, they exchange love letters on Christmas and Valentine's Day. They don't believe in exchanging gifts. They exchange love letters because they feel it's a real time to dig deep and be emotional, and it's not about the commercialization of Christmas. And I thought that was actually very special. And nobody, I've never thought about this before, doing this as a thing. I've done it for Valentine's Day, but I hadn't thought about doing it for the holidays, the Christmas holidays or Jewish holidays. And so I throw that out there with a caveat that I'd love to hear what you're spending and what you're doing that's going to make this holiday a more meaningful season for you. 404-872-0750. Lines are open. We've got a mortgage call that I'm going to take right now, but I would love to hear from you. Are you spending less? Are you spending more? Are you spending the same? And what are you doing to make this holiday more meaningful for you and your family as we end what I would consider to be the fifth year, the fifth recessionary year. If you go back, starting with the high of the housing market in 2006, it has been a decline ever since. I suppose technically we weren't in a recession until 2008, but boy, things really got dicey. So any way you want to look at it, four or five really tough economic years, what are you doing this year to make it a more meaningful holiday season? 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. If you like, you can tweet me at Glink. We will be reading those as well from the show. 19 minutes past the hour, Janet joins us on the line from Decatur. Hi, Janet.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you for taking my call. I have a mortgage rate question and then a Christmas holiday observation for your unscientific poll.
Okay, sounds good.
What you mentioned that if because I normally at the top of your show you talk about mortgage rates for the week, and I didn't catch it. You mentioned
under 4%.
Under 4?
3.86, I think it was.
Is that for 30-year money?
It was.
Dang.
Just like really. And under, if you're going to do a 10-year loan, which is starting to become very, very popular, it's under 3%.
Dowie.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm hoping I'm freelancing right now, and I'm hoping to get a real job soon.
Oh, I hope you do as well, because it's going to, as a freelancer, you have to have 2 years of work history.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
just going to kill you for a refinance.
Yeah, I know. My Christmas this year, I'm definitely spending less, partly because I just don't have as many people to buy for, but some of my gifts I'm making.
Mm-hmm.
For people, and it also impacted. Normally, I like to do five or six of Clark's Christmas kids, and I could only do two this year.
Oh, but thank you
so
for doing.
So it impacted that kind of stuff too, which kind of bothers me because it's really fun to do. If people have never shot for Clark's kids or any kind of wish tree, do it because it's lots of fun.
Well, thank you for the two that you were able to contribute to because that is so meaningful for their lives. And listen, there's always next year, right?
That's right. Thanks.
Thank you for your call, Janet. Merry
Bye.
Christmas.
Merry Christmas and
Thank
happy
you.
Hanukkah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. 20 minutes past the hour. What are you doing to make this Christmas more meaningful for you? 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Link. We'll be back to take your calls next on News Talk WSB.
Anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
25 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Blink. Thanks for joining us today. A couple of weeks before Christmas, we're talking about if you're spending more, less, the same, and what you're doing to make the holiday more meaningful. Barbara joins us on the line from Lawrenceville. Hi, Barbara.
Hello, how are you, Elise?
I'm great. How are you? Merry Christmas.
You know, talking to you every week or listening to you every week, and it's just like catching up with an old friend.
Oh, well, thank
you. I met
you
years ago when Clark and you were going to the high school and selling books, so I have your book.
That is like 100 years ago.
So when Clark's not there, I'm not disappointed because it's like, oh, Elise is on, yay.
Oh, well, thank you, Barbara. I will be filling in for Clark a couple of days running up to the end of the year, which should be a lot of fun.
Oh, good, good. Because there's always, I have to tell you something after the radio, but I just wanted to share with you what I'm doing this Christmas. I had saved for years all the kids' t-shirts. I have two sons. One's a soldier and one's a spectator.
Wow.
And my son zips around in a wheelchair, and my older son is now a first lieutenant in Germany, but he's back from Afghanistan, and I had saved his t-shirts from swim team and all the places he went, dominoes and all kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
Georgia Southern. And I just gave them to my friend, my colleague at our school, and she made the most beautiful quilts for them both. And he just called on Skype, and I showed him this quilt. And he was just like, awesome. I was afraid he wouldn't see it before Christmas, and I didn't know if he wanted me to send it there or not, but I showed him, and I was just so, he was so thrilled with it. Georgia Southern's on it, Domino's is on, all these things that he did in his life, and it's just me, it meant a lot to both of us.
You know, Barbara, that's one of the most beautiful and thoughtful gifts I've heard in a very long time.
And they made one of his elementary school in Pittsburgh. They actually did a drawing of the school outside and the different kids playing. So the principal was switched to the old principal's desk is over there. The new principal's in school. Jay in his wheelchair is out there on the lawn. You know, it's so cool. So they each have one of those, and they each had a Rocky and Bullwinkle towel. So they each got a Rocky Bullwinkle part of the towel.
I mean, just crazy
things that we did, but it's just so beautiful, and I'm so grateful to my colleague to just give me so much joy
well,
to make it.
I think, Barbara, you've given an amazing idea to so many people today. I could think of things that I've saved all these years and what a wonderful use for them. And you've given it to both boys, which means that years from now, when they sit around at Christmas and they're looking at their blankets, they can talk about all the things that they did in their lives and have somebody to share that with. What an amazing forward-thinking gift. Thank you so much for calling and sharing. Really appreciate it. Merry Christmas to you. 404-872-0750. Whatever you're doing to make the Christmas holidays more meaningful, share it with us now. 404-872-0750. We'll be right back. News Talk WSB.
List Link is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
36 minutes past the hour. That's hilarious. Merry Christmas, everybody. 404-872-0750. We're talking about spending more, less, and whether you can do something more meaningful or what you are doing that's more meaningful for the holidays. We're also taking your money and real estate questions, as we always are. Let's go back to the phones. Howard joins us on the line. Hi, Howard. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Well, thank you. I got a question about trying to refinance as a retiree. What kind of things does a mortgage company look at when a person's retired and trying to refinance?
They're looking at what your steady stream of income is, and is it enough to pay for your monthly mortgage payment?
Okay.
So if you have a pension and you get Social Security and you have some investments, all of those will get put into the pot to try and figure out how much you're actually living on every month, and is that enough to pay for the refinance. They're also going to look, like everybody else does these days, at whether you have any equity in the property.
Okay.
Do you have any equity?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got to have some equity in the property. I guess about a third of the value of the home is in equity.
Okay.
I got another question regarding bonds. How does the situations in Europe affect the bond market here in this country?
I don't know that I have a good answer for you. It's what it's done so far is to cause a flight of safety. So U.S. Treasuries are still, despite our deficit problems in this country, Treasuries are still considered really safe compared to other investments around the world right now. So it's a flight to quality, which has pushed down the prices. That's why you see the interest rates dropping.
Okay.
So that's kind of where it's gone at the moment. At some point in time, because we're pretty much near zero, that's going to reverse. We also saw the European, I think it's the European Union, no, the European Central Bank push down interest rates this week back to, I want to say, 1%, which is where it was in 2009. It's the kind of stuff that keeps these, I talked about this earlier in the show, it's the kind of things that make people, bond traders, get up at 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning to try and figure out what's going to happen. But I'm not sure anybody has a really clear picture of what's going to happen and what the actual effect is.
Okay. All right, thanks a lot. I appreciate your answers.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling the show. 39 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Sue joins us on the line from Fairburn. Hi, Sue. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, and I'm so excited to get through to you today.
Delighted to have you on the show. What's going on?
Well, I have a mortgage question, and it's spurring an answer you gave a lady a few minutes ago,
mm-hmm.
and that was in regards to the refinance rates, the mortgage rates for refinancing. I believe you quoted 3.8 for 30 years.
It's an average.
Okay. That's where I've all of a sudden...
Well, it's an let me be more specific. It's an average for people who have stellar credit scores, credit history, enough equity in their property, and plenty of cash.
Okay.
To be really specific.
I attempted to refinance this past June with my current mortgage company, who is a big mortgage, big mortgage company.
Uh-huh.
And I had been in an interest-only loan. It was a 30-year with interest only for 10. And when we took that out years ago, I mean, I had like 90,000 equity in my home. You know, never saw the drop. Which then, bingo, I don't have the equity anymore.
Yep.
So in June, I attempted to refinance, and I was approved, but I was upside down, and I would have had to come through with so much money, and I chose not to do that. I chose just to keep the money in my retirement fund and not to take it out and put it into refinance.
Okay.
But then I heard the Obama plan that had come out in the fall about
It's HARP 2.0, Home Affordable Refinance Program. 2.0
right.
is how it's known, and it started in earnest December 1st, but for people who are really far underwater with their mortgages, it won't really kick in until the first quarter of next year sometime.
Okay. Well, I recalled my mortgage company, and the agent told me to call him back the second week of December, which I did last week. And he looked at it over, and he says, well, he had told me, he says, I really think you're going to qualify for this plan. He says, but call me back. So I called him back, and he looked it through, and he says, oh, yes. He says, you've definitely qualified for the plan. And he did everything on the phone, everything electronically. Within 10 minutes, he says, you're approved. He said he didn't have to come back and do another appraisal or anything else. And I have a very, very high credit score. And my mortgage payment is and will be well within reach of what my income is. And but he came back. He first said 4.75.
Mm-hmm.
And then I made the mention to him. I said, gosh, I was hoping I could get better interest than that. And a few minutes later, he came back, well, I can do a 4.5.
Okay.
And I'm at 6 now.
Yeah.
So going the 1.5%.
You want to know why you can't get 3.86.
Yes, exactly.
I'll tell you why. Because you have no equity in your property. It's not, you're applying for a special government program, and these interest rates that are the average interest rates, again, are not for people who don't have who have no equity like you. You're underwater.
Okay.
It's only for people who have at least 20% in equity, who have very high credit scores, which you have,
yes.
who have plenty of cash to pay all the closing costs, and basically don't...
Oh, I didn't have that. I could do that. They didn't
right.
ask for it, but...
But you don't have the equity.
No,
so,
you're right. Yeah, you're right.
So you should take this deal.
Okay. Well, I thought I probably should. I have been paying a couple of $100 more a month every month on my interest only. But I'm being told that by going the 30-year fixed rate, I will see the principal drop quicker. than by me just putting the extra $100, $150 a month in, which I've been doing.
Well, but you're okay. So you've just but you're adding 10 years to the loan, right? So you've had it for 10 years. So you only have 20 years.
I haven't had it quite 10.
Why don't you see if they can do a 20-year loan for you or a 15-year loan, and then see if he can drop the rate from 4.5% to like 4%.
Well, yeah, I could do that.
Why don't you just do that? And then you're getting the triple whammy that I love. You're lowering the interest rate. You're probably going to lower the payment or at least have it be the same. But you're crucially,
$25 less than what I'm paying now.
Yeah, but you've added 10 years.
Yes,
so
I have.
Crucially, you would cut your loan from 20 years left to 15 years left. And that's where you're going to see the biggest savings. So why don't you go back and ask for that deal?
That's a good point. And I did sign the Truth in Lending and all this, but I'm sure all that could be. I haven't finalized anything.
Why don't you give him a call?
Yeah, well, that's
tomorrow morning.
But I was just wondering, it seemed like I was being penalized again.
You are, but it's...
But because of the equity, which
it's
I...
It's the
really
equity.
No,
you can't... You have no control over it.
Yeah, that's right.
It just is what it is. But this is a better deal for you, and you should take it. But I want you to get the very best deal you can if you're going to do this refinance. Because once you refinance, that's kind of going to be it for this property. And you're going to, you know, hopefully just kind of quickly pay it down. And on a 15-year loan, you really will pay it down very, very quickly. 404-872-0750 on the Elise Kling Show. We've got... let's go back to the phones. Linda joins us on the line from Jonesboro. Hi, Linda.
Hello, Elise. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you.
I'm trying to refinance for the last year or so, and recently I've been being told by my mortgage company that I have this credit enhancement on my loan that Freddie Mac has to remove. Well, I
hate
called Freddie Mac, and they said, well, no such, it's called an eligibility code that my mortgage company keeps telling me that Freddie Mac has to send the information to them in order for my mortgage company to remove it. So I called Freddie Mac and asked them, what is this eligibility code? They said, well, we don't know what your mortgage company is talking about. No such code exists. So I went on the Internet and I Googled credit enhancement / pool insurance. That's another name for it.
Yes, it is.
And I don't know, how can I get this off my loan so I can refinance? Because I never knew it was on there.
Yeah, I don't know why Freddie Mac put this on, like, millions of loans.
Uh-huh.
They did, though. And for some reason, it is preventing a whole lot of people who should be able to refinance. Like you.
Uh-huh.
And I have never had a straight answer from anybody at Freddie Mac about this.
Uh-huh.
So the answer is I don't have a good answer for you, because nobody I know understands why Freddie Mac put this on some of these loans.
And see, I called Freddie Mac and they said no such code exists.
Yeah, it's not true.
Oh, my goodness.
It's not true. I'll tell you what you can do, though.
Uh-huh.
You can, I assume your loan is with a big bank.
City?
Mortgage. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So what you can do is you can file a complaint with the OCC, which regulates all the big lenders.
Okay.
Go to this website, helpwithmybank.gov.
Helpwithmybank.gov? Okay.
So Help With My Bank, I'm going to pull it up right now. This is the place to go to file a complaint.
Uh-huh.
From the Office of the Controller of the Currency. They administer all the national banks.
Okay.
In the right-hand side, it says need more help, and you can contact the customer assistance group, and you can file a complaint. Just click on there,
uh-huh.
Fill it out. You're going to get and write down the whole thing, and then you'll get a case number.
Okay.
This is also the website you go to check on the case and see how it's coming along. But what I want you to do is I want you to email me at my website,
uh-huh.
with this case number and your complete contact information, and I will forward it to somebody who actually looks at this stuff over at the OCC.
Okay, thank you so much.
I don't know that it means that you're going to get a resolution faster, but what I do know is that they have assigned people who work with them at all of the big banks.
Uh-huh.
And every week they have a case review meeting.
Uh-huh.
And these kinds of issues come up, and
uh-huh.
they check the status. So I do know that behind the scenes something is happening. Whether it results in what you're hoping for, that I can't promise.
Oh, okay. So once I get a case number, email you and
yep.
give you that case number.
Yep. My website is think.com. thehinklink.com, thinklink.com. You can email me your complete contact information and your case number and just a paragraph that explains the problem, and I will make sure that it gets forwarded along so at least the right people are seeing it.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Have a Merry Christmas. 48 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Let us continue on with our calls. We have Sue joining us on the line. Hi, Sue. Sue, you with us? Okay. Sue is not with us. Let's try Michael. Michael from Sandy Springs. You with us?
Yes, I am. How are you?
I'm good. Happy Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Same to you. Happy Kwanzaa.
Thank you very much.
Have to throw that in there.
Why not?
My question is this. My credit score is really low. It's under 600.
Okay.
And my intent was to rent a property, but the owner said, you know, you really should buy this. I really want to get out from under it. He's offering me a $140,000, 5%, and he will actually finance the down payment.
Uh-huh.
So my question for you is, even though I have great income but such a low credit score, I was going to spend a year trying to clean up my credit, but 5%, which is what, a point and a half above prime right now, do you think that's a good deal for me, given my circumstances?
The question really, Michael, is do you want to buy this property or do you want to rent?
I actually like
if you were going to buy a house, would this be the house you wanted to buy?
For me, yes. Right now, yes.
Okay. And how long are you going to live in this house?
I'm thinking about maybe 2 years because I'm single and I have no dependents. At the moment, something changes, I'm giving myself about 18 to 24 months to be able to move forward.
Okay. Then stop. The answer is no, you should not buy this house because you should not buy a property that you're going to leave in 18 months to 2 years. You're never going to be able to sell it, and you may lose money on it.
I see.
So unless he's, you know, you said he's offering it to you for $140,000. Do you have any idea what the property is really worth?
He paid $250,000.
Doesn't mean anything anymore. Do you know what other homes are selling for in the area?
Without any reparations or anything like that, they're running about $75,000 or $80,000.
Okay, so you're going to pay $140,000 for homes that are selling for $80,000. And you're going to leave it in 2 years.
No, I'm not saying I will. I'm just saying it's possible. Just
nope, because you always have to play to the lowest common denominator, right? So
yes.
If you think you could leave in 2 years, I have to assume you could leave in 2 years.
Yes.
So you're going to pay $80,000 more than all the other homes or $50,000 more than all the other homes in the area, and you might leave in 2 years. No, you should not buy this house.
Okay, well, let me ask you this one last question. Given my circumstances, then I should rent and try to fix my credit to a point where I can get a regular loan.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I have maybe 100, maybe 300 pieces of information about how you fix your credit on my website at thinklink.com. And you can also go to my blog at the Equifax Finance blog. Would just go to blog.equifax.com or just go to equifax.com. We run a blog for them that includes all of this information on how to fix your credit, how to buy a house, all this, you know, taxes, insurance, all the stuff that you need if you're going to be a homeowner.
Yes.
And it's all free. So there's just a lot of great information from trusted sources out there on how to do this. I just, you know, this is what you're describing is a recipe for disaster. And even though you have great income, sometimes the smarter financial move is to rent, fix your credit, save your money, and then go and make a move. When you're ready to make a 5 to 10 year move, that's when you should be thinking about buying a house. 51 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, 404-872-0750. I'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
57 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. So this week we saw John Corzine, who is the former governor of New Jersey, testifying about his recent role as CEO of MF Global, which is a clearinghouse that has taken down And, well, we should simply start by saying that the company seems to have made, they're magicians, they've made $1.2 billion just disappear from client funds. And if you've been following this case, and I have some people that we are very close to who are have been trading using MF Global as a clearinghouse, and we've been hearing what's been going on, and it's very different from what you read in the news. The basic thing that they did that is just so offensive to everybody in the investment industry is they took money in segregated client funds and they invested it into something pretty risky. And then they seem to have lost all the money. But worse is that as the firm was failing, and it failed on October 31st, there were all kinds of suspicious transfers that they're now trying to unwind. John Corzine basically said to the Senate this week, quote, "I simply do not know where the money is or why the accounts have not been reconciled to date." Now, I do give him credit for saying anything because he could have just taken the fifth. But, you know, gross negligence or intent to commit fraud. It's hard to know exactly which way this is going to fall. But as a CEO, and I felt this way about Enron and about all these other companies that have failed. If you go as the CEO with the big dollars that you get paid, and you basically say, "I don't know what the heck is going on in my own company," shame on you. And shame on everybody who has placed their trust in you. That is just an unacceptable statement for the CEO of a company to make, particularly a company like this, from the guy who used to head Goldman Sachs. I just absolutely appalled. 59 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glenk. We're going to take more of your questions. Go back to talking about Christmas coming up next here on News Talk WSB.
Well, maybe just a half a drink more.
Put some records on while I pour.
Neighbors might say.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody. It is 7 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glenk. It is just 3 weeks to Christmas. Actually, it's 2 weeks to Christmas. Hard to believe we're running out of time this year. So glad you could join us today. 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time. My website, thinkglink.com. thinkglink.com. One of the things that I've been writing about this week are housing market predictions for 2012. I've been writing about it on MoneyWatch.com. And what's really interesting about it, about MoneyWatch, this blog that I wrote, is that it's possible, and I say it with all my fingers and toes crossed, it's possible that while we're not out of the woods yet, we are starting to clear the nation's balance sheet. If you think about us as being a big, huge ship, I think it's possible we're starting to turn the real estate ship. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to turn anytime soon, completely. But this is actually a big change. It gives me some hope that, well, 2012 isn't going to be very good. 2013 might be better, or even 2014, that we're starting to think about moving into the right place. Now, Doug Duncan, who I've known for a long time, and he's the vice president and chief economist for Fannie Mae, he said most Americans expect no improvement in their personal financial situation in the next 12 months, right, through 2012, and will likely remain wary about undertaking the significant financial obligation associated with homeownership until their view of income, expenses, and job security heads in a more positive direction. However, the Fannie Mae November National Housing Survey found that homeowners believe that their home value will rise 0.2% over the next year. And this is the first time in 6 months that home price expectations have moved from negative to positive territory. That's sort of a big deal. This whole idea of consumer confidence and how it reflects back onto the economy is crucial. It's very, very important. So people are starting to think that maybe their home value will start to rise. And so Doug Duncan said that though their home price expectations have become slightly positive, they're definitely, consumers are remaining concerned about the direction of the economy, and they see their household finances as being relatively flat. Now, we talked about that at the beginning of the show, that even though people aren't really making any more money, retail sales went up a little bit. Not in all the big stuff, the important manufacturing stuff, but, you know, in the stuff you buy at Target. So what else is going on? Well, mortgage rates for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage are still under 4%. And if you're willing to look for a 15-year loan, and I'm going to say this just flat out, you have to have great credit, you have to have plenty of equity in your property and some cash to pay your closing costs. But if you look at a 15-year mortgage and you fall into that category, you can find one for 3 to 3.25%. And some lenders are now offering this sort of 10-year loan at 3% or less, which is just absolutely amazing. Now, another good sign is that there are individual markets where homes are starting to sell. Now, Atlanta's not necessarily one of them. I mean, homes are selling. They're just not selling at a rate fast enough to really dig into that whole pile of foreclosures that's out there. But at the height of the Great Recession, 7% of homeowners were at least 60 days late on their mortgage payments, according to a new report this week from TransUnion, which is one of the three credit reporting agencies. This year, TransUnion says that mortgage delinquency rates might tick up to 6% for the first 3 months of 2012, but are going to fall to 5% by the end of the year. Now, that's 2 percentage points below where it was at the height of the Great Recession. Now, what was the pre-recession average? 1.8% of people were 60 days late or more. So we're still well above that. It's not good for families living in those properties. There is still a huge backlog of foreclosures. And so I'm not saying that this is all perfect. All I'm saying is it looks like we might be turning the ship a little bit. And the hope remains, and my deepest hope, is that 2012 is going to be a better year for real estate. If you want to see some of the links and the backup documentation, go to moneywatch.com. You can click on see all the Money Watch people, or you can just sign up for my free weekly newsletter, and then we give you the links directly. You don't have to go to the worry about trying to find it on the new CBS News site. 404-872-0750 is our number. Let's go to the phones. Who is it? Oh, Joe. Joe joins us on the line from Chamblee. Hi, Joe.
Hi, this is Joe the Trucker for real.
Hi, Joe the Trucker for real. How are you? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Ms. Plank.
Thank you.
I've sat on a budget oversight committee for DeKalb County, and my boss has sat on a budget oversight committee for Wilburn. My question is coming from a grand jury seat. How do you feel about the loss of tax digest, what it's going to do to the budgets of towns and cities, and when are we going to... This is a tsunami wave of tax digest loss, and when do you think that's going to hit the news?
Well, across the country, we are seeing a compression of budget for states and communities, and it's not just from real estate property taxes that are, you know, being paid less, but we're also seeing less money coming from the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that every city and town is feeling that pinch. And I think what we're already starting to see, and it's reflected in the unemployment numbers, are huge numbers of employees getting laid off.
Well, and I'll ask you another question about that when you get through.
Okay. when people get laid off, I think it's really bad for the local economy. And so I think that having these budgets and shrink is terrible. But I was sitting and talking with somebody who's on the village board of the town I live in, and he was saying that there is just so much that can be done to streamline these costs. But even in my tiny little town, pensions are now 30% or 20% of the budget as opposed to 10%, which is where it was 15 years ago. And so those numbers are a brick wall that we are running into at 50 miles an hour. And it's happening all over the country in big towns and big cities and small towns and little communities. And there's just a tremendous hurdle that we have to overcome. And so I'm very, very concerned about tax dollars and where they're coming from. And I'm very concerned about taxing homeowners more because to make up for the shortfall, because I think that that's just simply, or property owners, I mean, I think it's an easy way to go, but I'm not sure it's completely fair, and I think that some places, real estate property taxes are already extremely high. I personally pay close to 3%. So that's kind of where I feel about it. What's your follow-up question?
Follow-up question is here at in Shambly High, and the surrounding apartments were supposed to have been torn down for asbestos, and right now they have the whole property fenced. The money was supposed to come from the Obama stimulus package back in August, July. However, that's died. So I'm in the middle of apartments that are vacated. It's a massive complex. Shambly High here in Shambly was supposed to have been start. They were supposed to have started this before the school year, but the money's not there. What do you foresee about this Obama tax stimulus or the stimulus package from Obama that was supposed to address schools?
Well, I think that it was my understanding of it, and I did not do a deep dive, or if I did, it was a couple of years ago. Is that the money was supposed to be applied for? Right. So if the community didn't apply for it within the time frame specified, I think the opportunity went away. In my community, where our high school is pieces of it that are over 100 years old, we were trying to get a huge chunk to start help with the renovation, and we couldn't get the community behind it, and they voted down the bond, the bond issue that would have been needed to match the money and then go beyond it to actually repair the high school. And so we lost our opportunity for that money. It was free money, and the community here couldn't support it, even though the high school leaks and parts of it are 100 years old. So I'm not familiar with what's going on in Shambly High, but, that's one possibility.
Do you think that that money will come back through?
No, I don't think so. I think there is no appetite in Congress on either side of the aisle to do this kind of stimulus, and I wish it would, though, because seriously, if we don't start investing in our roads, bridges, and schools, and we start figuring out how we're going to give back to the next, future generations with better educated kids who can compete in a worldwide market, I don't know what we're going to do in this economy. Joe, thank you so much for your call. 17 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Sheila joins us on the line from Conley. Hi, Sheila.
Hi there. Quick question. Going back to the HARP 2, I think it's called.
Yeah.
When I look online and read the information, it looks like it only applies to Freddie Mae and Freddie Mac holders. Is there anything in the works to expand it to other mortgage holders?
At the moment, no. HARP, which is the Home Affordable Refinance Program 2.0, is only available to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loans, which is a huge chunk of what's out there. Now, if you're FHA, there are separate programs available for FHA and I think VA and the USDA programs. Together, Fannie, Freddie, USDA, VA, all of that account for today about 93% of the mortgage market. What kind of a loan do you have?
It's through, MetLife. It's not an FHA loan. It's a private mortgage company, basically.
Yeah.
So there's nothing really in their vested interest to work with people who are upside down.
No. I mean, they might, but no. Have you talked to them?
No. I'm so far underwater now. I mean, it's like you make your mortgage payments every month, but, it just kind of sticks in your craw that you're paying all that money for something that's now valued, like a third of or fourth of what you're actually paying for.
Yeah.
But I guess that's just what happens sometimes.
Well, I think you can call them and you can talk to them about it. Did you get a normal mortgage from them or a different mortgage?
Yeah. No, just a regular 30-year.
Just a regular 30-year mortgage?
Yeah.
Well, you can call them and see if they're working with anybody. I don't know who regulates MetLife's mortgage program, but one place to call would be the Georgia Department of Banking and Finance.
Okay.
Because they have to be registered to do mortgages in the state of Georgia.
Okay.
I can give you the number. It's 770-986-1633. I would just call them and see if somebody there can help you figure out who regulates them and what they're doing. They may know more.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Merry Christmas. It's 19 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Well, we haven't talked much about Christmas, but happy to go back to that topic. We are talking about mortgages, and if I can help you out today, that would be great. We have a prize pack we're going to give away in a couple of minutes, so stay tuned for that. It's a good one this week. Always nice to have a little extra cash on hand or prizes to do something fun for the holiday. Our number again, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
44 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Time to do our WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. The value, $449. It includes a maintenance agreement gift certificate for your home's HVAC, courtesy of Shoemate Air Conditioning and Heating, a Woodruff Arts Center $25 gift card, a gift certificate for a full house plumbing inspection, courtesy of Superior Plumbing, and a $25 gift certificate to the Lakewood 400 Antique Market happening December 16th through the 18th. A lot of good stuff. Very useful for the new year. Value again, $449. We're going to give it to the fifth caller, to our prize pack line only. 404-741-0750. If you are the fifth caller, you're going to win this prize. Be nice to Fred. He's the one who's going to pick up that call. And good luck. 26 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. Tonya joins us on the line from Gainesville. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I almost hung up to call back for the prize.
I'm sorry you don't get to do both.
I know. I had to make a decision.
Well, I'm glad you stuck with it. How can I help you today? Maybe this will be more valuable to you in the long run.
Well, I hope so. I have been doing a lot of homework and just trying to figure out, are there any options for someone who pays their mortgage on time every month? I have good credit, though I'm like everyone else and I'm upside down in my mortgage. Are there any options at all for refinancing?
Well, we've been talking about the Home Affordable Refinance Program 2.0 that just got kicked off this month. And it's designed for people exactly like you, people who are on time with their mortgage payments, want to refinance, you don't want a loan modification, are underwater with their mortgage, but all the other stuff looks good. And so if you have a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loan, you may be it may be available to you.
Well, it is a Fannie Mae, though, you know, it is held under a big bank. I did research that and find out. So when I looked at the HARP program before, I mean, has this recently changed? Have they modified?
Yes. That's why we call it the HARP 2.0 program.
Okay.
Now, the first HARP program only helped 70,000 people, like nothing. It was a disaster. This one has been retooled. It's supposed to be much more effective. It's going to help so many more people, blah, blah, blah. We'll see if it does, but it's your best option right now. So have you been to makinghomeaffordable.gov?
No, I have not.
So makinghomeaffordable.gov should be your very next stop. And it's the reason I say that is this is the place that where all of the rules live for these kinds of programs. So you can go on makinghomeaffordable.gov. The second little button says lower your payments, lower your rates, get help with a fallen home value. There's all kinds of things. So if you want to lower your rates, it talks about the Home Affordable Refinance Program, and then it talks about the new program and what it's doing. So I would suggest you go there and start your search. If you need more assistance, you can go to 888-995-HOPE. It's the Homeowners Hope Hotline. And these are HUD-approved housing counselors, and they can help you understand your options. They can run through all of the details. They can help you figure out whether you're eligible or not. All of these things are really helpful. So makinghomeaffordable.gov and then 888-995-HOPE. 28 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, 404-872-0750. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
Christmas future is far away. Christmas past is past.
36 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Couple of weeks to Christmas. I can't believe that we're even saying that it's almost 2012. But here we go. One more year. 404-872-0750. It is 37 minutes past the hour. Let's go to the phone. Stan joins us on the line from Alpharetta. Hi, Stan. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
Thanks
for having my call. Listen, the question I have is that I have an interest-only loan. It's a very good rate. It's at 3.25%. I'm probably in the eighth year. I've got a 30-year amortization table on it. But with interest rates as low as they are, I've thought about trying to roll this over into more of a fixed-rate loan. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, you say that it has a 30-year amortization, but is it interest-only for the first 10 years and then it's a 20-year amortization?
No, it's interest only the whole time. It was a 5/1 ARM, and it just kept interest only. Just kept rolling. It was based on the LIBOR index, which
Let me explain it a different way. Okay. How are you getting equity paid down in the property?
I just pay principal every month.
You're just paying principal on your own.
Well, it's on an amortization table, though. I mean, I guess they tell me how much to pay. I mean, based on 30 years.
Okay, but it's not really interest-only unless you're not required to make those payments, right?
Well, I guess that's probably true. I don't know if I'm required, but I do anyway.
All right, so you're in the eighth year of this. What I think you should do, since you have 22 years left to get this loan paid off, and you know that interest rates aren't going to stay where they are forever. They might stay this year and next year, but maybe not. I think what you should do is bite the bullet, and you should try to get a 15-year loan.
Right.
That's somewhere between 3 and 3.25%.
Okay.
And hopefully you have at least 20% interest, 20% equity in the property.
I think I do, but the problem is it's a jumbo loan. So how are the jumbo rates?
Jumbo rates are only about a quarter to a half percent higher than everything else.
Oh, okay.
So you might actually, for a jumbo loan, you may be able to get somewhere around 4% for a 15-year.
Okay.
Maybe even under 4% for a 15-year.
Okay.
So I think the rates are really good, but I just don't think anybody should be counting on these low interest rates staying where they are. I mean, this is a historic low. That means in 50, 60 years, we haven't seen rates this low.
Oh, I think they're definitely going up. That was the reason for my call.
Yeah, no,
I think I'm going to be in this house at least 4 or 5 more years minimum.
So if you think you're going to be here 4 or 5 years, I would say to you, it's probably worth refinancing.
Okay.
Because you may, you know, if you're here for 3 to 4 years, maybe not. You could take the risk that it's, let's say you're 3.25 this year, 3.25 next year, and then the next year goes up to 4.25.
Right.
And then the year after that, it's 5.25. Well, you've done fine.
Right.
But if you're going to be there sort of 4 to 6 years or 4 to 7 years, it could, your risk is that it could go up quite a bit higher than that. That every year it could go up 1 percentage point or 2 percentage points. I don't know what your particular loan allows.
Well, it can go up, I guess, a maximum of 1 up to 9, I think, is a high. But obviously, I don't want to get it. Where should I look for these rates? Should I just get online and just go to Bankrate.com or America Save or whatever it's called?
You know, I think it's fine to go to Bankrate if you want to shop around. But I think you should really, and I advise this for everybody looking for a refinance, you want to talk to a credit union if you belong to one or you can join one. A couple of the big banks,
okay.
A mortgage broker or two, and a small regional bank.
Okay.
You really want to look at sort of a variety of lenders because it's going to be different for everybody. When you're looking at a jumbo, even though more people are doing jumbos again, you may find that you're very limited. Like Bank of America may do it, but nobody else will.
Okay.
So you really have to do a wide swath of research to figure out where you need to be.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Have a happy Christmas. 40 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Marianne joins us on the line from Suwannee. Hi, Marianne.
Hi.
Oh, how are
so
you?
So nice to talk to you. I'm so happy I got through.
Well, delighted to talk to you, too. Merry Christmas.
Okay. Thank you. You, too. I lost my husband 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And since that time, I haven't been able to really get a full-time job that really helps me pay the bills. I have four kids. Two are married, though, and they're gone, but I have two in college. And I work three part-time jobs, but I've been lucky that I've sold my real estate holdings. And so now I paid off my mortgage, so I'm mortgage-free, thank goodness.
That's wonderful.
And yes, and but I feel, you know, not being able to really have a big house, and, you know, I'm stuck there. I can't sell it to even downsize. I'm sitting on some cash in about close to $300,000. And although I am using it to carry myself through, you know, and thankfully I have it, but I just don't know where to put it. Where can it do the most good for me? You know what I'm saying?
I'm
afraid to invest. I'm afraid. I'm just so skittish. And,
so, Marianne,
you know,
let me ask you a question. This big house that you have,
yes.
How much, you paid it off the mortgage, right? So now you're just,
yes.
You have all the carrying costs and the taxes.
Yes.
What do you spend a year on all that?
A year?
Yeah.
You mean taxes and all that?
Taxes and the carrying costs and the maintenance and the upkeep and this big house. What do you spend?
I'm not really sure. The taxes are close to $4,000. And, you know, I have to hire somebody to do the lawn and, there's electric and...
Okay, so my point is that that's a number you should know.
Okay, yeah.
You should know that number, and you should know... I mean, it should roll off your tongue. And the reason I say that is that you've got this pot of $300,000. Is that all the money you have, or do you have more money?
That's all. Well, I do have a 401... his 401K that I have begun disbursements from, because I was, you know, I couldn't find any work, you know, it was my only option at some point. And there's about $80,000 left in that.
Okay, and are you getting Social Security? Are you old enough for that or not?
No more Social Security because my two kids are over 18. So
got it.
I'm down there.
So really what you're talking about is you've got this house, and how much is the house worth?
I would say, and then the way the neighborhood is going, it could be somewhere between $200,000 and $250,000.
Okay.
If I could sell it.
If you could sell it. Are there a lot of foreclosures in the area?
Not a lot, but enough. And the other thing is the house is pretty maybe neglected. And so, you know, nobody's buying those fixer-uppers now unless... You know, it's a foreclosure or something.
One idea, Marianne, is that, you know, you take your lumps and you sell this house, and even if you only walk away with $150,000 from it instead of $250,000,
right.
You no longer have all of these expenses that go along with it.
Right.
And you have another $125,000 in cash, and you can either buy a much smaller house in better shape, or you can just rent a house somewhere. The other thing you might consider doing is renting out part of the house or a room to somebody else who needs... It sounds to me like you've got a lot of empty rooms in that house.
Yes.
And maybe there's a way for you to rent out some of those rooms or rent out the whole house itself and go and live somewhere else. I'd like you to think about how else you might be able to make this work instead of being stuck in this house. And I'd like you to understand what all of your costs are and how you're going to be able to make it through, because... what I don't understand is what your draw rate is. In other words, you've got three part-time jobs. You need to know exactly what your expenses are, what you're bringing in, and what your draw rate is. How much you're drawing down from your $380,000 that you have every year.
I think I'm drawing about $1,000 a month from it.
Okay, so...
I have to consider I have two kids in college who, you know, still, you know, they live, you know, they're away, but... You know, it's still their house, too. So wherever I go, I'm going to have to make sure I have room for two kids.
Right. But are you paying for their college or they're taking loans?
student loans.
Okay, so they're taking student loans.
And scholarships, yeah.
And scholarships. That's fine. That's completely appropriate.
Right.
The thing I don't want is for you to completely impoverish yourself by the time you get to be 65.
Yeah,
and,
me too.
And that's a real concern because it sounds to me like you might be in your 50s.
Yeah, late 50s.
Late 50s, you got a while to go to get to Medicare, and you've got,
yeah.
You know, you've got.
I feel like I have this cash on hand that, you know, and there's really no place to
there's
put it.
No place to put the cash that's going to be safe for you.
Yeah, there's no.
All you can do is you can might get 3 or 4% if you put it away for a couple of years. I wouldn't do anything longer than that.
Okay.
And you need this money. You need access to it. So
yeah.
It's basically you're going to earn like 1% to 2%. So you could take half of this money since your draw rate is $1,000 a month, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So you could keep $36,000. You've got the $80,000, but you got to pay taxes on that $80,000.
Yeah, but fortunately, when you don't make a lot of money, you don't pay a lot of taxes.
No, that's true, you don't. But you still, if you're drawing down $12,000 from it, you might have to pay another $4,000 or $5,000 in tax.
Right.
Right? So your draw rate is about $16,000 on that. I'd like to see you make a list of everything you're spending, everything, be really honest, and everything that's coming in, and then the amount that you're pulling down. And my sense is you could probably take $50,000 or just keep that $80,000 and everything else can go into some sort of either short-term bond fund or some of it in a money market, some of it in a bond fund. You just want to be so conservative with this money. So conservative with this money because I think you're going to need this money.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
until I find a job that I could... You know, maybe carry myself a little bit better.
Right, or you get rid of this house.
Yeah.
And then you rent somewhere cheaply, and you now have another $125,000. But the thing I don't want to have happen is by the time you hit 65, for this $380,000 to just evaporate, because this is your money. This is your money for your retirement, and I just want to make sure.
Do I look into a bond fund? Where would I? How would I get information on that?
What I really want you to do is I want you to sit down with a fee-only financial planner.
Okay.
And I don't want you to buy stuff from this person. And I want you to be really clear with them up front that you're just going to pay them for their time, which could be $1,000 or maybe a couple $100 an hour.
Okay.
And I want them to look at how much you're spending, your outflows. That's why I have to be really detailed about it. And how much you're bringing in.
Yeah.
And what your draw rate is, and where your savings is, and where your assets are, and all the any liabilities you have, and I want them to look at all of that, and I want them to make some recommendations for you.
Okay.
But I want you to be really clear with them that you're not going to invest with them.
Right.
You may decide later to invest with them if you really like them, but I don't want them thinking that up front. What I want them thinking is that they're going to get $1,000 from this, or $500, whatever it's going to be,
right.
And they're going to give you advice, and you're going to go and make it happen. Because that way, it keeps them completely clean.
Right, okay. And I get an education.
That's right. That you're paying for the education. And then when it comes time to invest, you're going to look at Vanguard or Fidelity, where index mutual funds cost like a tenth of 1%, and you don't pay any fee or overhead. And call back when you're at that point, and we'll walk through the next step.
Okay. Well, it's been a process, and I'm getting quite an education, so on with the next step.
Listen, Marianne, my mother and my father died when he was 49. My mother was 44, and three of us, I had just graduated from high school. My sisters were still in high school. And while she'd managed the checkbook, nobody ever balanced the checkbook in our house because my dad and mom would write checks off the same checkbook without ever talking to each other. But and they didn't have all that much money. And somehow my mom managed to become enough of an expert. And where she couldn't become an expert, she got really smart people around her. And she built a team, like a baseball team, right, of advisors and investors who could help her and educate her to where she needed to be. And I'm very proud of all that my mother was able to do. And you are no less smart than my mother, and you can do it as well. And you've managed, you've got four kids, and you're working three part-time jobs.
Yeah.
I think you can make this work.
Okay.
You just need some extra help and advice to get you over this hump and educate you to take the next step.
Okay. That is,
Thank you. Thank you so much for your vote of confidence.
You can do it.
Okay. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas. And will you be back in touch when you're ready for the next step?
I will.
All right. You can always find me here or on my website.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Marianne. Merry Christmas. 51 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, 404-872-0750. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. This is the Elise Glink Show. 2 weeks to Christmas. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Jill joins us on the line from Cumming. Hi, Jill.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you? Merry Christmas.
Oh, Merry Christmas to you, too.
Thanks. What's on your mind?
Well, here's my question. My husband and I are thinking of buying some investment property because we have some money sitting in the bank, and obviously it's not doing anything right now. We own a house. We have a 30-year mortgage. I think it's 4.75%. Mm-hmm. And we do have at least $100,000 of equity in the house because we put a large amount down on it. We have a home equity line of credit that we've never used. The house that we're looking at is about $70,000, so we could technically pay cash for it, but then that doesn't leave us a lot in reserve fund in case something happens. We thought about, you know, maybe taking part of it on a home equity line of credit so we can still deduct it. But then we thought because our credit score is in the 800s, low 800s, but 800s nonetheless, we could just refinance our home at a lower rate for 30 years because we just like sticking with the 30-year in case something happens, the payment's lower, we just pay extra every month on the house.
Okay, and your question for me is,
what's the best way to do this? Do we take the money out of the bank and pay cash? Do we take some money out and increase our mortgage on our first house? Or do we just get a mortgage for the second house? I don't know. Just pay cash. I don't know what to do.
Well, you would have to put down 30% to get a mortgage on the second house. So you'd have to put down $20,000, $30,000 anyway.
Okay.
So you could do that, but then you're going to try to get a $40,000 mortgage, and that's very hard
really
to get
hard
these
to do,
days.
I was told.
Yeah, it is. So you're probably better off just emptying the bank account for the 70. I don't know how much you have in the bank, but let's say you have 100,000 in the bank.
We do. That's
okay.
What we have.
So you could pay 70,000. You have 30,000 in the bank, but you have this $100,000 equity line of credit that if something happened, you could tap into.
Okay.
So meanwhile, you're not borrowing money you don't need. You're hopefully doing better with this property than you would having the money in the bank. And it seems like a fair way to ameliorate all the issues going around.
Okay.
Plus, hopefully you can rent out the house and it becomes, you know, positive, so it starts to feed the money back into your pocket.
Well, that's what we're hoping. I mean, is it a good time for someone like my husband and I to invest in property, or what else?
Let me just answer that one question, because we're running up to the end of the show. Is it a good time to invest in property? You will never have a better time in your life to buy an investment property in Georgia, right? This is the middle of the foreclosure crisis for Georgia, and while things are starting to improve in other places, it's not that fast, it's not happening that much, interest rates are still super low. If you want to refinance your current property, you can, but seems to me that if you're going to buy this, the best thing to do is to pay cash and then try to rebuild your equity and your cash amount in the bank as quickly as you can. Merry Christmas, Jill. 58 minutes past the hour. Adam Goldfein is next. It's time for us to go. We'll be back next week. We're going to have a special show on jobs and careers and finding a new job in 2012. I think it's going to be a hugely useful show for anybody looking for a job. So if you know somebody, have them tune in next week at 11 o'clock for the Elise Glink Show. Have a great week, everybody. Merry Christmas.
Yes, and wonders of his love, and wonders of his love.